Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. Hello! Ronnie's here. I am also here. Travis is not here because he felt like he should go to a Christmas party tonight instead of recording about Aftershock Comics. Shame on you!
It's always Christmas where we're at.
Every day is Christmas when you listen to the Aftershock Central Podcast.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We're here to talk about some books that came out today. I guess tomorrow if you're listening to this.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Man, I'm just... See?
Yeah.
This is what happens when you travel through time.
Yeah.
When you revise the timeline, you forget things.
You get those white spots on the brain.
Yes, you get the white spots on the brain. Maybe I should become an animata and get some robot parts inside me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got three books to talk about. We've got Dead Kings number 2, Patience, Conviction, Revenge number 4, and Animosity Evolution number 9. Before we do that, is there anything else we need to talk about, Ronnie?
Well, there's no news, but since the last time we recorded, I've gotten this DM a lot. Mm. So I wanted to bring it up, a question to you.
Oh, I like questions.
Because I know when you and Paul did that other podcast.
Never heard of it. Continue.
People would ask you all the time, or even like now, what's your favorite Marvel book? What's your favorite DC book? Right? Mm, and the blanket answer is all of them.
Yes.
But I've gotten this question a lot this past week and a half about Aftershock.
Oh. What's my favorite Aftershock book?
And to me, the easy answer is all of them. Because I genuinely do like all of them.
Yes.
But I don't like getting that answer when I ask for recommendations. So it was a hard question.
Yeah. It's like when somebody asks me, I see you like Batman. Where should I start? And I say Batman number 1 in 1939.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it. That is a hard question. I have an easy answer for you. The correct answer is Witch Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
But we can't say that because it hasn't come out yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could say it, but...
Yeah, we can say it. So, of the books that are out, so are we talking about like a series?
It was just a blanket question. So, like, a couple of them I knew, and I knew kind of where to direct them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But then a couple was just, I'm assuming, people that listen to this or other podcasts or whatever. And then it was just, I don't know them from Adam. So I was like, well, it depends on what. So I gave them a couple of different options, you know?
Yeah. So I think number one, it depends on, like, are they asking you what your favorite is or what would you recommend? Like, where do I start with Aftershock?
This was the basic question. I've heard lots of great things about Aftershock and more lately about how awesome of a company they are. I haven't read any, so where should I dive into?
Aha! See, those are my least favorite questions because they're complicated. They're very complicated.
Yeah.
Because where you dive in really depends on the kind of books that you are attracted to reading.
Right. Like I said, like a couple of them, I knew who they were or at least talked to them over time. So I kind of knew where to guide them. But, you know, two or three of them, I didn't know them at all.
Sure.
So I gave them a couple of examples and reasons why.
Okay. So what did you pick?
Well, I picked Animosity.
Yes.
For
right answer.
Well, there is no wrong answer on these questions. and you know, gave the sales pitch for it. If that's the kind of like thing you like. If you don't like that and you like, you know, fantasy type stuff, then you're gonna laugh. But I picked. Dang, now I can't even think of the title. The one that you guys didn't like that much that I did. And Aaron, loves it too.
It's not that we didn't like it. I just wanted more from it. Lost City Explorers.
No, not that one. No.
Oh.
The one where they become boyfriend and girlfriend.
Oh, gosh. Dang it. What's the name of that book? Yes. Yes, we're drawing a blank because we're masters of our craft.
Yeah.
And we are now buying time in order to figure out the name of this book, which we're not going to remember. So,
yeah.
Yes, the one where they are like the chosen.
Yes, yes.
Yes, that one.
That was a Sean Lewis book.
Yes, the Sean Lewis book.
Yeah.
The Sean Lewis book that is called, you're still supposed to be, here we go, Betrothed.
That's Betrothed, yes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's where you would kick people off in their Aftershock journey.
Well, for like the sci-fi type thing, because, you know, it has the sci-fi-ish type thing, plus mixed in with like the, I don't know, like the Romeo and Juliet type of thing.
Yeah.
And then I said the ultimate favorite, which is Black Eyed Kids.
Right answer.
And
no, that's a good one.
So they were like, oh, you can do this? And I was like, well, yes. Actually, you don't even have to wait on issues for any of them. Most of them are in trades. Or Black Eyed Kids is a oversized hardcover.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer, Ronnie. I like both of those answers very much.
Yep.
If I were to recommend a brand new reader to Aftershock, I would first of all obviously ask where they're coming from. We're going to assume they're coming from superhero comics, so Marvel or DC.
Mm-hmm.
So my initial recommendation would be Alters.
Oh, yeah.
And I would also recommend Super Zero.
Yep.
Because Super Zero is fantastic.
Yep.
Especially that twist in the last issue.
Yes.
Brilliant. Brilliant. If you just want, like, some, like, really good, fun, like, I don't know, like, just a good comic. I think that's where things get a little more complicated. But I would definitely recommend, Moth and Whisper for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would definitely recommend, Animosity.
Yeah.
And Black Eyed Kids. So those would be the three.
Yeah.
But yeah, it depends on the genres.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I will say you probably can't really go wrong with really anything that you pick.
Yeah.
I think my least favorite Aftershock book that I could easily name, it would probably be either Brilliant Trash or Captain Kidd.
Interesting. Okay.
Yep. I think Brilliant Trash has a lot of story potential. I just don't know if I enjoyed the execution as much as I thought I was going to.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
And then the same thing with Captain Kidd. I think the original idea was great. But you know, maybe now that it's done, I might go back and reread it. I think the problem that I have with Captain Kidd is that it had a couple of issue delays because of artist problems.
Yeah.
So it kind of, I don't know, made it a little duller than it should have been.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one question for you that Aftershock themselves tweeted out. Did you see it?
Oh yeah, I did see it.
Do you know the answer?
Hang on. I don't have a tweet.
What is the four books? What is the first book that launched Aftershock out of these four titles?
Yes, and the right answer is Replica.
Yes.
Ha!
Because it debuted on December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following week, Insects debuted.
Yep.
And then the week after that, so that would be like this week of that year.
Mm-hmm.
Super Zero.
Yep.
And then the last Wednesday of December was Dreaming Eagles.
Correct. Now, that would have been 2015, right?
That is correct.
Man, I'm on it. I am on it. The only reason I know any of these answers is because I remember going to SC Comic Con, which always happens late March, early April, and it was like the first big con that Aftershock had done.
Mm.
And I saw those exact books on the table, and Joe was there and Lisa was there.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Before the second wave of four books.
Yeah, before the second wave. And Joe probably does not remember this, but I remember going to the table and talking to Joe about his previous work that I really enjoyed. And of course, as a result, I ended up buying the books on the spot.
Well, knowing Joe, he's going to say that he does remember that, even if he doesn't.
That's true. That is true. But I do remember going to the table and talking to Joe about Negative Burn for a couple of minutes. And he's like, oh, yeah, you should check this out. And I was like, cool. Glad to see you're back in comics, dude. So, yeah, that was awesome. And here we are three years later, still talking about Aftershock. I mean, not this podcast. We didn't start this podcast 3 years ago.
Right, yeah. And but, it just keeps getting better and better.
It just keeps getting better and better. That is true. That is true. All right. That's a good question. Keep sending those questions. Let's talk about some books, Ronnie.
Let's go for it.
Where would you like to start?
Let's do Dead Kings first.
You know, here's the thing about this podcast, Ronnie. You and I are always in sync because that is the book that I had pulled up. So Dead Kings number 2 is Steve Orlando writing, Matthew Dow Smith on art, Lauren Affey on colors, and Thomas Maurer on letters. Since you picked this book, tell me why you picked this to go first.
I think out of the three, it might be the straightforward one.
Interesting. Okay. I'm following your logic. Continue.
Because it's basically just more setup and intro into the world and kind of backstory-ish. I mean, so, but we know that going in, though, right?
Yes. Yes. I'm actually going to disagree with you. Okay. I think that Animosity Evolution was the most straightforward one. And the reason I say that is, man, I got to get some more matcha tea in me. My throat has a tickle. The thing about Dead Kings is that it does jump in time quite a bit. I don't think the first issue did it as much. There was a little bit of it, but I think the second issue does it a lot more. And as a result, I think it makes the story a little harder to understand. And really, in terms of this issue, I think that just happens in like the first half of it. Once we get what's the lady's name? Mary something.
Yeah, Mary. I'm looking for it. Sorry.
No, you're fine. When Mary pops in, I think that's when things definitely get a lot more straightforward.
Yeah.
And I think that may be the moment when like we kind of start to see what this book is about.
Yeah. When it does the decades past type thing.
Yeah. You have the flashback to the Great Iron War.
Yeah.
And then you come back to the present, and that's used to kind of tell us who Mary is. But you know, she, what's the main character's name? I want to call him Glenn every time, but I know it's not Glenn. Anyways, when she and he meet up and they decide to go rescue his brother, Genin, I think is the brother's name.
Yep.
I think it's when things really start to cement as to what this is. And it's kind of like, I think in terms of story structure, it's actually pretty interesting. It reminds me a little bit of like, Usagi Yojimbo in a way.
Okay.
Where you have this like quest story,
uh-huh,
and you're meeting characters along the way that kind of influence the story and relate to past events of the overall story. But really the book is not about that. I mean, those encounters make the story go along and move forward. But really it's about the moment that you're dealing with these characters.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty interesting. It was a change of pace that I was not expecting. Because the problem that I had with the first issue and the first half of this one is because this book takes place in a post-apocalyptic Russia, you have all these Russian words popping in that you have no idea what they mean.
Yeah.
Right. And right. I know Steve Orlando went to school. He may be either like a Russian language major or like a Russian history major when he was in school.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very familiar with a lot of aspects of Russian culture throughout the centuries. But I myself, I'm not very familiar with Russian culture. So to see some of these words pop up, it's kind of difficult, you know?
It's jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, I with that, and I agree with you on those parts, but I did enjoy this issue more so than I did the first issue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yep, I agree with that. Did you find out what Mary's name was?
Nope. But the main character is Sasha, right?
Sasha, that's his name. I don't know why I wanted to call him Glenn.
I don't know.
Oh, I know why. My wife and I were just talking about the Twilight Zone reboot that's coming to Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And Glenn from The Walking Dead is going to be one of the characters.
Stephen Yeun?
Yeah, Stephen Yeun.
So you just had Glenn on the brain?
Yeah, I just had Glenn on the brain for some reason. but yeah, yeah. Overall, I really like this issue, though. I think Mary is a much more interesting character than Sasha is. And maybe she will do him a lot of good. Because he seems kind of whiny, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he seems Luke Skywalker from The New Hope.
There you go. I like it. That's a good analogy. Look, I understand he's trying to save his brother. His brother's in a really crappy place. But man, like, grow up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're in the post-apocalypse being chased by freaking ninjas on flying motorcycles that look like horses.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can't be so reckless in order to find your brother, right? Like, he's got no skills. Like, real skills in order to find his brother. Yes. And he's got no plan either, right?
Yeah. Let the balls drop and man up.
That's right. Because once he finds Mary, he's like, oh, what's our plan? And she's like, don't worry about it, bro.
Yeah. I got
you, bro. We'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah.
I mean, not like that, because she's Russian.
Yeah.
She probably says, never mind, comrade. I don't know. Stone Mary, I found it.
Okay.
Yeah, she was awesome. Matter of fact, let me tell you, dude, now that she's here, I wish, like, she was just the main character. Because when you get the flashback scenes to the Great Iron War, and there's, like, revelations that happen when she starts talking about that. But then further into the story, like, there's a few more. They go to that bar and beat up those dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a little bit more about her. And then right before they meet the train conductor,
yep.
You get a little bit more about her. And she's, like, a complete badass.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go bring it to this, but should not be. Like, when they're talking about these the train railroads and whatever, how the trains used to move around in, like, invisible tracks. And, like, you assume, like, they're using whatever, like, form of language they have to express things, right?
Right.
Like, if – I'm going to bring this up. I don't believe in ancient aliens, but let's say, like, ancient aliens came up, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, people in the whatever Bronze Age wouldn't know what the hell a spaceship is. So they would call it, like, you know, whatever – the god riding the sun, or like,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
They would put it in their own terminology.
Yeah, it'd be like a metaphor.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that she talks about these rail yards, mm-hmm. with, I mean, seemingly, I would assume just tanks, right?
Right.
But then, like, they start talking about this teleporting tank, and I'm like, whoa, like, now we're getting kind of a little serious, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as all that stuff is being brought up, I didn't feel like – I was like, well, this is out of left field. Like, what the hell are they talking about? It was kind of easy to understand what it was that they were implying.
Yeah.
But again, the only problem is the names.
Yeah. And then they brought up the Mad Bastards. And I thought they were talking about us.
Well, we are Mad Bastards. Episode title. Yes, that's true. Yeah. So, yeah, really cool. I like this this conductor character.
Uh-huh.
He seems like he's going to be kind of a badass as well, yeah. And definitely has a history with Stone Mary, so I look forward to seeing that play out on the next issue.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's rate it up. Ronnie Barron, give me a scope.
I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5.
Cool. I'm going to go a 4 out of 5.
Awesome.
I think originally I would have rated it a 3.5, but because of this twist with Stone Mary coming in, it just really upped it for me quite a bit.
All right.
Plus, we get to see giant robots in this issue.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
And the flying horses, the mechanical horses are badass too.
Yeah, those are awesome. Those are awesome. I hope they dive in a little bit more into the story of how, like, why the world works the way it does now. Because it's pretty obvious that they've kind of, like, outlawed technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, like, the groups in power, like the Oleshniki. Or whatever they're called, you know, they have these flying horse motorcycle things, but nobody else does, right? Like, everyone just walks around. So I'd like to see how that whole thing happened. And obviously it has something to do with this great Iron War, right? Like, they were probably like, by having this technology, we're just screwing ourselves. Let's just ban technology.
Yeah, yeah. And this one makes me excited to see where we're going.
Yeah.
Past this.
Yep. All right, let's go on to what I felt was the most confusing of the bunch. But maybe not once we talk about it, the book. Patience, Conviction, Revenge, number 4. This is written by Pat Clinton with art by Marco Ferrari. I believe a different artist on this one, if I'm not mistaken. Although the art, very similar, so I do like that. I don't like when they change artists and it's just completely different. Colors by Patricia Camino and letters by Jim Campbell. So I was really confused about this book, Ronnie. And I think the reason for that is the way that the story is told. I find it difficult to focus on certain aspects of this book as I'm reading it. And normally I have to read an issue of this book like 2 times at least to like really get everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because on my first read through, I find myself being distracted by like the word structure because of the comedy bits.
Okay.
And there's a lot of it. And I think in this issue in particular, there was more of that because the main character is like basically has a concussion.
Right.
And can't think straight. So it almost reads in that way. Even when he's not narrating story or actually speaking. A lot of the book I feel reads that way until Donna shows up, which is my new favorite character. Sorry, Robot Paul. but Donna's awesome. And so as a result, I was a little confused. And there's always like new elements brought into the overall plot of this revenge quest that he's on. But we haven't really seen the revenge quest, right? Like the characters he's trying to get revenge on, we haven't really seen.
Right. Yeah. I'm same way. Like this took me back and I was confused a couple of times. So, and I think one of the things like during my first read through was the art change. It's subtle.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. Nope. It's just like, I think before we compared it to like, Sean Murphy's from Chrononauts.
Yes.
But like here, it's definitely not that. And so I think when I started it, I was looking forward to that style. And then like I was trying to read it, but also like look around. And then, yeah, it kind of jarred me.
Yeah, I think it definitely has some inclination of that Sean Murphy art. But it's a lot looser, much rougher pencils, I would say.
Than normal.
Yeah, than normal.
Yeah.
Or normal for this book.
Yeah.
But I think even through that, there's still some like really great pages. Like the page of the show when the casino is on fire. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, overall, it did feel a little different.
Yeah.
And I think I compared it a little bit to some anime and manga on the previous few issues. This one had a lot less of that.
Yeah.
Right.
I could see that.
It definitely felt like more of I don't even know if it's an American style, maybe more European style of art.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Even in the coloring.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of like cross hatching and stuff on the pages and on the background. So I like that style,
mm-hmm.
but it was different.
Like Jazz Maynard style.
Yeah, like Jazz Maynard, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But still cool. I like how there was some world building here with the casino. Cause you get to meet a bunch of characters that don't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But that you see that like, you know, these people are kind of stuck in this endless cycle of just gambling their life away.
Right.
And then have no means to repay their debts. So they keep on gambling to hopefully make money to repay their debts.
Yeah.
And you know, that's human nature as well. I mean, I see that all the time. People yeah. play the lottery, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or people at casinos. I mean, I don't go to casinos often, but...
Yeah.
I mean, that's the same thing, right?
I went to a casino once in my life. I went with exactly $100. And I lost all but, like, $5. And then I won, like, $100. And then I spent like 50, and then I won 50, and then I spent like 75, and I won like 75.
Yeah.
So anyway, I ended up leaving the casino with like $50.
Yeah.
And the cool thing was I was a little inebriated.
Yes.
Because of course you get free booze.
Yeah. I've only been a couple times, and one time was because Melissa had a conference in Vegas, so I took a week off and went with her. So I stayed in the casino while she went to her conference.
Nice.
And then the other time was like a casino just got built around us. So within the vicinity of us. So we had to go check it out just to be nosy.
Yeah. 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 The one that we went to was a casino boat in Louisiana.
Yeah. That's what ours is too here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to this book. There's a lot of casinos in this book.
Yeah.
Anyway, so as it turns out, so we've got let's just be real. Robot Paul's the main character of this book. Robot Paul and his allies trying to, go on this revenge quest. And then they meet up with Donna, whatever number she's got. And the reason she's my new favorite character is she's a robot, except she rides around in a wheelchair, gets pushed around by a human. And looks like a female version of the Godfather in like Godfather 3. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool. And the thing is, they butt heads, right? So there's this conflict between the two groups. But really they want the same thing, right? Cause Donna is after the same people.
Yeah.
Because she sees the way that these organizations are treating normal people. And that's why we spend a good deal of time with these people at the casino. And she wants all this to stop. So, I mean, they're after the guys for different reasons, but ultimately they should ally themselves. And that's kind of what the standoff is at the end of this. Which, of course, you got to have a standoff because I think at its heart, even though we're not in the desert anymore like we were in the first issue,
yeah.
I think at its heart this book is still very much like a Western.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like a cyberpunk Western.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really cool. I like those two genres separately, so it works well together, at least in this book. All right, is it time to rate it up?
Let's rate it up.
All right, I'm going to rate this one lower than the previous issues. I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5 also.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the Donna trying to eat the hamburger thing.
Oh, man, that was awesome. And then she's getting made fun of because she's double-fisting the burgers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. I like that. I do like that. All right, final book of the evening, Animosity Evolution number 9, Marguerite Bennett, Eric Gapster. I mean, same creative team the entire run, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So let's talk about this one because this one's going to be a little deeper, I think.
Yep.
When
I said that it was straightforward, like you said, I think it is straightforward, but it hits deeper, like normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I picked with Dead Kings. I said it was more straightforward.
Yeah.
This one's straightforward, but it's deep.
Yes, but it's not like completely straightforward either, right? Because there were some twists in the story that had me a little confused. And I think the only part really is kind of towards the beginning, maybe in the first couple of pages, because you get some dialogue popping up, and I'm wondering if it's like Wintermute and the Ur-King talking to each other, but that's not the case at all. There's some like eels or sea snakes or something that kind of swim around the Ur-King,
yeah,
and they're the ones that are saying this dialogue that made little sense to me.
Yeah.
So once I actually saw them in the picture, I was like, oh, okay, like, that makes a little more sense now.
Yeah. The Ur-King is in blue, right? Or is that because that's the giant squid, right?
The giant squid is the octopus.
Yeah. So yep. Their bubble's in blue. And Wintermute's in black.
Yep.
And then the stingray or whatever and the eel is like just bubbly white.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a couple like, he's got a whole entourage with him, right? Because it's like the eels and whatever else there, the stingray and the dolphins swimming around them.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes it confusing because they like try to speak for him, right? It's like if I don't know if you ever watched stuff set in like the Middle Ages where like people go to like the royal court, mm-hmm. and you have like the advisors talking for the king and like, you know, the jester and the queen, like everybody's talking for the king and the king's just like hanging out, not saying anything.
Yeah. Just and supposed then, like, to be there and be, menacing looking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's kind of like that with the story. So like I said, once I caught on to all these other things around them, then it made a little bit more sense. But really, let's talk about the plot of this book, because the S really hits the fan here.
Yeah, it does.
For one, we learn that the Erdking's got technology that he's appropriated, we'll say, from humans that are trying to, I guess, invade the ocean. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he kind of has this giant platform with spider legs coming out of it.
Yep.
This giant metallic platform.
Yep.
And that allows him to come on land. Mm-hmm. But really, I think the main thing here is the downfall of Wintermute.
Yeah.
And you know, this has been building up for 9 issues now, so it's bound to happen. I was actually very surprised that it happened this early in the series.
Yeah, I was really taken back by that, too.
Yeah.
Because I figured this would happen around, I don't know, 14 or 15?
Yeah.
But nope.
Nope. Issue 9, Rip Wintermute.
Yeah.
And not just, like, rip, but, like, really gruesomely rip.
Yeah, by a pig.
Death by pig.
Yeah. Damn it.
Yeah, so it seems like, you know, when you have somebody with ultimate power, there's always groups vying to take over that power. And you always have groups that feel like they should have more rights than they're given. I mean, that's also human nature, right? We see this all the time. That's how revolutions come about, how, you know, different groups come out. I know, like, right now there's groups in France protesting various things. And I think it started off with, like, really high gas prices.
Yeah.
And now it's turned into other things as well. Mm-hmm. And the groups don't have, like, the same ideology, but ultimately they have kind of the same goal. And they really don't like the president there.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
But this thing happens all the time, right? It's happened for thousands of years where, you know, a king or whatever assumes certain responsibilities that maybe people feel they shouldn't. And you have things happen to take those people down.
Yeah.
You know, you got the French Revolution, the Boston Tea Party, you know, whatever. Name it. It happens all the time. Except now it happens here with these animals, because the animals, number one, aren't happy about Wintermute creating these robot animal hybrids.
Right.
Because they feel like they're going to be replaced. Mm-hmm. And that to me was the thing that hit me the hardest. I don't know how much you follow this, but there's a lot of talk in like the tech sector about like basic common income, or what is it? I think it's called basic common income, where you know, as we get more and more machines doing work and AI getting smarter, like what's going to be the place of people in the world when there's no real jobs for people, when robots can do everything?
Right.
And so there's people suggesting like, oh well, everyone just makes $50,000 a year and you don't need to work.
Right. Which would be awesome, I guess, kind of. But it'd make us lazier than what we are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be like WALL-E.
Yeah. Or some people that don't work 80 hours a week.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I thought the whole thing was really interesting. And this whole thing starts off with the pig, who disagrees violently with Wintermute, attacks Wintermute, chomps a piece of her neck, I guess, off. And Wintermute's kind of incapacitated. He gives this really eloquent speech for a pig. And everyone's like, yeah, the pig's right. Like, F Wintermute.
Yeah.
So they throw Wintermute in jail.
Yeah, because everybody loves bacon.
Everyone does love bacon. That's the episode title. That's the episode title. We found it.
It took us a while, but we'll get there. We promise. I really thought it was awesome and kind of symbolic that they took her to Alcatraz, or it happens on the Alcatraz Island, too.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's a little odd because Alcatraz is abandoned, but I mean, I guess in a world where
everything's the abandoned,
rules don't apply. Yeah, where everything's abandoned, I guess that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because she can't get out of there.
But, like, back in the day, though, the most notorious and evil of evilest criminals went to Alcatraz.
Right.
So that's where Wintermute is, because that's how they see her.
Yep. But she still doesn't see herself that way. And I thought the interesting part is she doesn't really blame any of the animals or people for what they've done to her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still won't call her a villain, but most of the time it happens in villains. But do you see them ever questioning what they did was wrong, though?
Yeah, probably not, right?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But the speech that she gives really, I think, is kind of what the three of us have been talking about for the last 9 issues. You know, what's Wintermute's, what's the word that I want to use? Her motivation, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the motivation is pretty clear, and it's kind of what we guessed. You know, she wants it to be a better world, but she's going to do whatever she has to do to make sure that that's the case.
Yep. Because the old laws don't matter. So
right.
the lines aren't as blurred anymore.
And, you know, the way she feels like things should go forward, maybe other animals and people don't agree with that, because they're still stuck kind of in the old ways.
Right.
And this is a new world with new ways. And, you know, she gets deposed because they can't see that. And as a result, she can't blame them for what they've done. But I do wonder if this has always been the plan.
To set her up to be a martyr for later on?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because she's talked to the guy about this before,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, when he was knocked unconscious, she was like, well, you're not supposed to be here, right? Like, you're supposed to come after my downfall. I think that happened, like, 2 issues ago when she met up with the dolphins.
And Adam didn't turn on her then.
Right. And he's still not turning on her now.
Right. Well, reluctantly he did, you know, but...
Well, I mean, if you've got hundreds of people ready to kill you, then probably a good idea.
Well, yeah, but he still didn't want to tell. So that just makes me think that it's all part of her plan anyways.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's definitely her plan. She's always been extremely crafty.
Yeah, strategic.
She plans, you know, 30 moves ahead. So right now we can't really see what the ultimate plan is, why she would sacrifice herself.
Mm-hmm.
But there's got to be something about Adam that she sees that he doesn't and that we as the readers don't see.
Right.
That's going to help usher this new era that she wants to have.
Yeah. Because I think that when he goes and sees her in Alcatraz, which I think's about the middle 3/4 of the way through the book,
mm-hmm.
And she's telling him how it's real easy to die as the martyr because the world wasn't ready for her yet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it'll come because it always comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with him, she's setting him up to be a better leader than what she is making herself to be now.
Yep.
Because he's actually going through this whole thing. The roller coaster ride, if you will.
Yes. And he's also able to see both sides of the story, right?
Yep.
Whereas I think she can, but she chooses not to in order to groom him.
Yep, right.
And the fact that, you know, he kind of sort of hands her over in a way and doesn't fight this revolt kind of gives him some credence with this other group.
Yep.
I mean, they let him go, right?
Yeah.
And they allow him to see her.
Yeah.
Whereas you would think, I mean, he's in the inner circle. So if you have a revolution, you want to get rid of the inner circle.
Right.
That's not happening here. So yeah. I think whatever her plan is definitely succeeding.
Yeah, I thought the pigs thing stopping at the end was a little twist too.
Mm.
Where not to behead her, to let her people be fed type thing. That speech.
Yeah, eat her alive.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's what the executioner does when she breaks Wintermute's neck.
Yeah.
I don't think she actually kills it. It's more just to incapacitate Wintermute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's...
And then everyone gets up on stage.
Yeah. But if she broke her neck, I mean, she broke her neck, right?
Sure.
So but it's kind of showing her mercy there.
I don't know about mercy, man, because she's still conscious. She's just not able to move her limbs.
Okay.
And fight being eaten.
Okay. Well, it's just like one of those last pages where her head's pretty much all the way twisted around, you know, and the blood's coming out. And I know you can, like, what is it, like a minute and a half afterwards?
Yeah, right.
But so at that point, I don't know if she'd feel it or not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, psychologically, she'd feel it and, like, the terror of and remember them tearing her apart. But to actually be tortured by the pain of being torn apart is what I meant.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the darkest issues, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Even that last page, right? There's no words in the last page. But you just kind of have Adam walking off. He's got like thousands of mayflies flying around him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see Kirikuri show up.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting and well done as well.
Yeah. He's the Mothman prophecy.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it means.
I knew it.
Oh, man. All right. Let's rate it up. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a 5 out of 5 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yep.
Is Marguerite doing anything else now? I don't even keep up anymore. I know she was doing a bunch of stuff over at DC, but I haven't paid attention to her name lately.
I don't think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because she has the second OGN coming out for Aftershock as well.
That's right.
So, which is Horde, which looks badass.
Yeah, it looks great.
So, yeah, these two things and that, I haven't seen her name pop up for a little bit.
Because
Batwoman's canceled, right?
Yes. Yes, Batwoman was canceled, and I think DC Bombshells is over.
Uh-huh.
She was doing Power Rangers or something for a while. I don't know if she's still doing that. I think they just rebooted that, so probably not.
The Go-Go Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyways, good stuff.
Yeah.
I like her work, though. She's great.
Yep.
All right, next week we have two books, and they're goodies, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Walk Through Hell number 6, and then Cullen Bunn's Witchhammer is out next week as well.
Which is the first series of the OGN hardcovers.
Correct.
Or the first of the series, I guess.
First of the series, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm going to tell you in advance, I'm going to geek out because the Witch Hammer is an actual thing.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, for sure. I figured when you were excited about it as much as I was that we were both, what'd you say at the beginning of the episode, in sync?
Yes.
Because of it being a real thing? Yeah.
You can be Justin Timberlake.
Oh. Is this where we sing Bye Bye Bye?
Damn it. We are in sync. but yeah, so next week should be a good one as well. If you want to get in touch with us, Twitter is the best place. Ronnie's at Rumbar316. Travis is dead to me. No, I'm just kidding. At The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Shock the world!